Blog Talk Radio.
From the lightning show over Mesilla Valley to the power struggle over Iran and broadcasting of it from a small, dingy, highly unusual yet very comfy single-wide trailer, Kelly O'Connell here. And today is the 27th of July. And lots of great stories out there. None more interesting, I think, than what is going on over the Iran situation. But the Ayatollah put out a cartoon, a little cartoon that said basically, if there's a war between America and Iran, it'll be America's fault. Anyway, there was a silhouette of the president holding a gun to his head, like it's time to commit suicide. It's very weird that these guys are in the middle of this. Or perhaps at the end of this agreement with America, and at the same time, they are provoking, and they're claiming that people are lying. John Kerry and other people are lying about what's in the details of the agreement. There's a lot of anger in the Senate and the House over the deal, and even former Senator Lieberman has gotten back into the action to try to get rid of it. So I'll have a little clip on that for you. As a matter of fact, I'm going to play that momentarily here. John Kerry saying Iran's death to America chants are not helpful and pretty stupid. Check this out. Probably not a great time to be John Kerry in terms of the aftermath of the agreement. Although Morning Joe with Coffee, Joe, what's his face from MSNBC, asked him if it wasn't the greatest day of his life. But check this out. And as usual,
my question is,
here we go.
If you could go through your reasoning on a few key provisions. For example, if you want Iran to comply with 10 to 15 years of obligations in terms of its nuclear program, why did we front load the sanctions relief? And I understand you have the snapback sanctions provision there, but doesn't that provision have some flaws in the sense that Iran already would have a huge injection of capital and the snapback provision would enable it to terminate the entire agreement, so it's only going to be used in limited circumstances for a monumental breach? And then finally, because we're integrating Iran back into the international community, did you ever ask them to no longer call for the destruction of Israel?
Yes, to the last. And I also told them that their
chance of death to America and so forth. They're neither helpful and they're pretty stupid. And so we absolutely discussed those things.
All right. Well, one of the interesting things about this Iran deal is that came out, you know, dealing with this president, you've always kind of got to listen to everything and try to parse what really happens in situations. But one of the things that happened was that there was some criticism that you didn't get any hostages back. We give this incredible deal to Iran, which apparently allows them to continue on building a bomb, at least putting together their nuclear program. And while this is going on, White House is saying we never had a conversation with them that when we didn't request our hostages back. In the meanwhile, somebody else says, well, we were afraid that if we brought it up, the Iranians wouldn't appreciate it. So I think that Obama is he's kind of challenged when it comes to making deals. And he doesn't have a lot of experience, and I don't think he understands the idea behind it. On the other hand, who knows what his what's his purpose? Is his purpose to basically, is his purpose to make the world more equal, more fair, to pull Iran out of this unfair situation where they're not allowed to have a normal economy and everything? Or is his purpose to give America an advantage, which is by definition his role? So, I don't claim to know everything about these meetings and such, but it seems to me that it is a very, very, of all of the people that are wringing their hands over this situation that are on both sides of the aisle, it makes you really wonder what is going to be the ultimate outcome of it. Some other headlines for you. There's still a lot of anger and dismay and shock over Planned Parenthood. And Rand Paul, who says, as a doctor, as a physician, I am very troubled by this other lady, this other doctor, who is getting up and talking about body parts, selling them, trading them, whatever. There's a lot of people out there that would like to get rid of the funding for Planned Parenthood. 523-1450, give me your opinion on that. Do you think that, and probably the listeners of this show would tend to be a little bit more on the side of canceling abortion overall, but should the government be in the business of killing its own citizens? Let's put it that way. Look at it. Forget the moral, the ethical, the religious aspects of this. The government is flushing the number one, basically the number one most important, irreplaceable element of society, an element of the economy, down the toilet every day. And if there's over a million abortions a year, I don't know how many that is, 3,000 a day or whatever it is, it really makes you wonder. I think it's 1.3 million a year, but your number one, I'm trying to find a very basic word here, but your number one most important asset, let's put it in those terms, is finding or having human beings so that they can make decisions, they can open businesses, they can work at other businesses, they can come up with patents, inventions, they can be in the military, they can go to college, they can be professors. You're taking this product that has really paid off for a place like China, even though they do have a one-child policy and have had massive abortions. One of the main reasons that America is said to be falling behind China is sheer manpower, and we're flushing our manpower down the drain. Look at it from the economic, and I mentioned this article that I wrote, but here is an incredibly emotional and I think a religious issue in a way for the left, and on the right it's religious, it's ethical, moral. We're forgetting the backdrop that this is happening against, which is history, our future, our economy. There wouldn't be an argument out there to open the border to an unlimited number of people pouring in here if we just had normal reproduction rates, right? So anyway, those are a couple of these stories. And I'm really, of course, one of the main stories is also as well, Donald Trump. Is he going to stay in? And of the people that I've talked with, I've repeatedly told them this conclusion that I kind of came to on the show, which was basically, I love to hear this guy stand up and say what's on his mind and not apologize. And it's making me feel like an American again, that we don't have to, apologize for every feeling and thinking. And you think about the way that we have been trapped in the corner in just daily life. We can't give our opinion. And I mean, I don't see Americans as essentially vicious or rude. I think we're a fairly polite people, or at least we used to be. And yet we cannot, share in the most humble or small way our opinions on things because they might offend somebody. We got real problems. I see Donald Trump, for whatever shortcomings he has, as someone pushing back against this. Anyway, you're listening to AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE. I'm Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450. Got a lot of stories I'm going to get into today. And we're going to come back and also talk about at some point this thing with Hillary's emails, and I'll try to get your opinion on whether you think that is going to be something that stops her. At some point, it seems like she's going to have to get realistic about the damage that's been done to her reputation. It's 617 523-1450, 805-6180 with the text line. We'll be back. There is some outrage or indignation over Mike Huckabee claiming that this deal with Iran is going to bring the Jews back to the oven doors, and people are lashing out at him about that, and so, which makes me want to ask, I mean, with the new Trump rules, does he have to apologize? Or I'm looking for a clip here for you of this, but I don't know. I mean, I like this new Trump standard. Speak your mind, and if other people are offended, so what? Can we get back to normal here? Does everybody have to apologize for everything that they say, everything that they think? I mean, you know what I mean? Isn't there something unhealthy about every time you go to say something, you have to wonder about the 20 or 30 different groups that you might offend? And I understand that there is, I was talking to somebody about this over the weekend, I understand that there is an argument for making society more polite, but I think we've already done that, haven't we? I mean, unless you're a Christian, unless you're a white male. and then it's open season on this. And I'm not even complaining because I'm a white male or a Christian. I'm pointing this out just out of the common sense attempt to explain that we're not really making the world a better place. We're making the world a safer place for some groups. Other groups are getting punished. And you might say, well, what difference does it make? It's about time that white men take it in the shorts. I mean, that's silly. Why not have the same rules for everybody? You know? I mean, I don't get this. Behind political correctness is this need for revenge that I find to be somewhat ridiculous, especially if you're complaining about people getting attacked for no reason. I mean, for the sake of the argument, nobody alive now was a slaveholder. So why treat anybody living as if they're slaveholders? You know, that's, I guess how I see it. I've got a clip here from Huckabee's statements, but let's check this out.
Congress continued to consider the nuclear deal that the U.S. and five other world powers just brokered with Iran. GOP presidential hopeful and former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee expressed he really doesn't like it, using strong language, in fact. Let me read you a quote now from a radio interview Huckabee gave Breitbart News. Huckabee saying this, and I'm quoting, "This president's foreign policy is the most feckless in American history. It is so naive that he would trust the Iranians. By doing so, he will take the Israelis and march them to the door of the oven," end quote. I'm joined now on the phone by CNN Global Affairs correspondent Elise Labid. So what's the reaction from these words?
Well, Fred, the reaction, I think people are really going to be very considered about speaking first about this. I haven't heard any reaction from the administration. Let's unpack what Mike Huckabee.
Well, I mean, let's be realistic. This deal does bring some level of danger to the Israelis, doesn't it? I mean, just by definition, they're the number one. They're the number one target of the fury and anger of the Iranians, and they're the ones that have to live with it, and they're the ones that have their name in the Constitution of Iran to be killed. So, of course, they're going to be affected by it. There's a little bit from Fox News.
Heard from Israel. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has lobbied furiously against this deal. He's calling the agreement a stunning, historic mistake.
The bottom line of this very bad deal is exactly what Iran's President Rouhani said today. The international community is removing the sanctions, and Iran is keeping its nuclear program.
Joining me now, former Arkansas governor and 2016 Republican presidential candidate Mike Huckabee. Great to have you on the program, Governor. If you were president, what would you do?
I would never have gotten into this deal. This is like driving into the dealership with a Lexus, a brand new one, and driving off with a Yugo. I've been reading through the 159 pages of this deal this morning, and Gretchen, it is stunning. Essentially what we've done, we've written Iran a check for $120 billion so that they can go out and make even more money. We've taken all of the restrictions off of the Iranians, who are right now holding Americans prisoner. They have murdered Americans. They've kidnapped Americans. They've sponsored terrorism around the world. And this is the equivalent of if a kid in your neighborhood is shooting out your windows with a .22, you turn around and give him a shotgun and make it even easier for him. I have no idea what the president's thinking in this. It has to be one of the most outrageous, irrational decisions that a U.S. president has made in relationship to foreign policy.
Okay, some pretty strong words coming from you, Governor. I know that you have a tight relationship with Israel. You've traveled there many times. What do you think that Netanyahu is thinking right now, other than calling it a horrific mistake?
I think he's scratching his head and wondering, what did he do to deserve this kind of enmity? This is the irony here. It's not just Israel. We're talking about Egypt, Jordan, the Saudis, the Emirates, Kuwait. All of these Middle Eastern nations are as appalled, at least privately, as Israel is, because they know that Iran is a bad actor. You don't reward bad behavior. behavior and think that maybe that will result in better behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And what this deal essentially does is to give an enormous reward. And I'll tell you how this deal works. It works under two conditions, that you trust President Obama and that you trust the Iranians. Gretchen, let me be blunt. I trust neither President Obama nor the Iranians.
Well, I mean, that kind of sums it up, doesn't it? I haven't heard anybody go after this deal. Well, there's been a lot of people going after this deal. So, but here's the thing. If you're in a superior position, and maybe this is part of the problem, maybe, although we see Obama as a strong leader within the United States, within the content, stop throwing stuff at your radio. We see him as a strong leader who's willing to stand up for what he believes inside of America and has regularly gone against public opinion, like on the border issues and many other things. Right? I mean, he's right now he's underwater, 50% disapprove, 45% approve, and whatever group of people there would be, I guess, undecided. Either that or they can't read English, but just kidding. But the thing is that he I think it around the world, he is not seen the way that he is over here. And I think that he is seen and treated as a weak person. And one of the things that, and the reason that I say this isn't just to take a pot shot at him, it's because when he came back from Iran or came back from this negotiation period, he said, you know, we don't have the standing that we used to have. And I'm thinking, well, whose fault is that? You know, you run down, you're running a company and then you run down the company to every other company, you know, get up in the media and make a bunch of statements about how bad off your company is and how many products are dangerous and how you have to apologize for these business decisions you made 50 or 100 years ago and how you might sell the company, but you might just close it down and the stock market plummets in the stock market. And then you're trying to say you're trying to do a merger or trying to buy something later and you don't have the power that you used to. Whose fault is that? So I like to put it into business terms because then you can see quite easily that if you put aside this president's kind of president is kind of presents himself as on some sort of a messianic mission. He's going to save America. He's going to save the world. If you put aside these things that have never really, well, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to say that no president has ever talked like that before, but that these things that are kind of outside of the ambit, the responsibility of the president, you know, it's your job, if you're president, to make America as good of a place as possible. And to the extent that you can pull it off, make the world better. But your main responsibility is America. And this president acts like it's his responsibility to make America fair in some abstract sense. And in this fairness, they would take out a steamroller and crush everything so that it was on the same level. And this, I'm kind of getting that metaphor from this article that I read over the weekend, written by some guy named William O'Reilly, not Bill O'Reilly, but I thought it was pretty good. It's like, what do the progressives want? Anyway, I've got a story that even Mike would love about this crazy event at New York's biggest outdoor bar that's like this elevated bar on top of this building. This woman throws herself off this building. You will be surprised at why she said she did it. But let me say she's Jewish and it has something to do with that. 632-523-1450 to call in, 805-618-02 text. We'll be back. I've got two great stories. Another one is about this guy that claimed to be a spy who died in Los Angeles with thousands of guns and tons of ammunition. We'll find out what we'll talk about what I found about him researching him. We will be at 6:33 on AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOB. Kelly O'Connell, right back. 523-1450 to call in. It's 6:37, and there was a spectacular display of lightning over the weekend, and boy, it was finally got just a little bit of rain, but it was worth it for the lightning, and not a lot of rain out where I was, but 72 degrees right now, sunny, 100 is the high, 71 is the low. It says it's just going to be sunny. Now, I saw a weather forecast coming up for the entire week. It said that there was going to be clouds, so I'll have to dig down. I'm starting to read. I ordered a couple of books on weather forecasting and meteorology and everything. So, and we got to get Bob Endlich back on here. But it's kind of interesting stuff, you know, science, a little bit of science there. Anyway, a lady is at a rooftop bar in New York, in the one that claims to be the largest in the city. There's a corporate event going on up there. In the midst of this corporate event, this woman kind of pushes through this crowd and runs to the edge of the roof. And there's some bushes up there towards the end of the roof. She kind of jumps through the bushes and jumps off the roof and dies, kills herself. Now, her name was Faggy Meyer, Faigymayer. You might say that's a weird name. Well, she's Jewish, and although I've never heard the name Faggy before, she was part of the Orthodox movement, and she left the Orthodox movement, and her parents basically, her community shunned her. And so she said that when she committed suicide, she left a note. She said, "I feel Hasidic Judaism shouldn't exist at all. My three nephews are being raised in a very strict Hasidic environment, and it isn't fair to them that they have to live their lives the way they do. The most fun they have is to color with crayons." So it's very, very restrictive. And she said if people were allowed to think, they would not be religious at all. And so basically she had, you've seen these pictures of these guys before in New York with the black hats and the long beards and everything. And, you know, very, very stern looking. And there's a lot of religious Jews in New York. That's one of the great Jewish cities in the world. But anyway, kind of a sad story, but very weird. And so, but she goes on this like incredible attack against the movement and claims that statement that would undoubtedly perk up Mike's ears that the Hasidic movement is way off base. Anyway, and I know that there's four strains of modern Judaism, and but you know, I really don't know. I think the Hasidic movement though is the one that tries to follow the Bible and all of the like this Levitical code and all of the eating restrictions and everything to the T. All right. Speaking of suicide, Sandra Bland, this lady that, did you hear anything about this story in Texas? She gets pulled over. There's a lot of talk about this, but speaking of suicide, she kills herself. She gets pulled over in Texas in the small town. Well, I think it's outside of, I think it's a little town outside of Dallas, but anyway, I'm trying to remember where it was. But anyway, it's definitely in Texas. All right, so she is combative. There's a cop behind her, pulls her over. He comes up to the car and says, basically, do you know why I pulled you over? You didn't signal before you changed lanes. And she says, well, you know, I don't. Okay, whatever. And then he says, well, you seem upset. She says, I am. He goes, why? And she said, I'm trying to move over out of your way, and you pull me over. And I don't think it's fair, but I'm going to get a ticket. And then he says to her, would you please put out your cigarette? And she says, I have every right to smoke in my car. Now, there's been a lot of commentary in the media about this, whether she has the right to smoke, whether she has the right to say, I'm not going to get out of my car. Now, I'm sure that the cop that pulled her over regrets the whole thing that, because what happened next is she basically, he gets her to get out of the car, and then they have a struggle in which he ends up, I don't know if he ends up, he says he's going to light, I'm going to light you up, but it happens, a lot of this happens on a video from the cop car, and then a certain amount of the struggle happens behind the police car, in which she ends up apparently falling on the ground, or the cop takes her down. She hits her head, then she says that she's epileptic, and the cop says, good for you. And so the cop, I think, felt very disrespected. The lady was angry. She was a big lady. She was taller than the cop. I don't know how tall the cop was, but she looked to be a good 6 inches taller than him. And then she gets into jail. She commits suicide. She's in there for like 3 days. And she's like texting people, I can't believe I'm still in here. And so then she has this funeral, and it becomes a big media event, and all of her friends come. And I'm thinking, her friends could come to the funeral, but nobody could go down and bail her out. So she had attempted suicide a couple of times. In fact, according to the Daily News, the New York Daily News, she had attempted suicide just a few days before that, after she lost a baby, or a short period of time before that. Anyway, so there's this debate. Number one, should she have been pulled over? Number two, should she have been arrested? You know, and so she, the main charge that she has is resisting arrest, and she supposedly elbowed and kicked the cop. So I don't know. She sounds, when you hear her talking, 523-1450, if you have an opinion on this, but she sounds angry, to say the least. I don't know. I mean, for me, I'm personally not going to pick a fight with a cop in my car. If I get pulled over, I'm just going to find out what he claims or she claims that I did wrong. But I just find it interesting that the media seems to be seeking for this perfect crime where the racist white cop goes after a black person and snuffs their life out. And we haven't found it yet. For every one of these stories, there's been a backstory that's kind of explained what happened. I'm by no means claiming that cops are perfect, and of course police officers are, under the same, you know, living in the same world as everybody else. Sometimes cops are dishonest. Sometimes they cut corners or whatever. But is America going to be better if we push cops back so that they have to greatly reduce what they do in the communities? It didn't work out in Baltimore. The murder rates there skyrocketed, but maybe there's a lot of people out there that think that cops are over aggressive in America. I don't know. Anyway, 646. I got this other story to tell you about this guy. It is so fascinating. This guy that died in Los Angeles, who told his girlfriend for years that he was a spy, and he collected a ton of weapons, literally tons of ammunition and bomb making stuff as well. And when the police went into his house, they had to blow up a bunch of stuff too. 646, Kelly O'Connell Show, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450 to call in, 805-61-802 text. We will be right back. It's 6:49. It is about 72 degrees outside, and as you heard, there is the chance for rain tonight. But if you caught it, and I don't see how you could have missed it, there was lightning all around the valley over the weekend, and it was, I guess that was Saturday night, huh? And I went out there and kind of drove a little way away from my house and got up on a hill to watch. And I think I'd missed the best part of it, but it was coming on the Oregon Mountains. It was coming behind the Oregon Mountains over by the missile range. It was happening towards El Paso, over towards the airport. I mean, everywhere you looked, there was pretty heavy lightning coming down. All right, so here is a little bit on this story that I was telling you about on this guy who's a spy, supposedly a spy, but really I think it was just a rich guy who was kind of had a fantasy life. But this is from CBS Los Angeles.
A large cache of weapons, missing women, that are part of the big mystery.
Well, that clip
take
is not going
to
work out.
Brittany Hopper is live in the newsroom with what we know so far. Brittany. And Elsa, this is a bizarre story that even a high-profile attorney says is...
All right, so let's cut the clip there. What happened was this guy had spent his life, and he had this girlfriend, a fairly attractive woman. He had told her for years that he had worked for the CIA, the FBI, and all this business. Now, he was very sick. He had found out that he had cancer. His girlfriend went on a trip, and she came back, and basically they were in this car. It sounded like outside of it was in this neighborhood where he lived. He says, don't worry, when I die, my people are going to come and get me. So she goes on this trip to Oregon and comes back and goes to the car. His body is still in there and it's decomposing. So she called this celebrity attorney and talked to him. He called the police, and then it gets even more interesting. Turns out that he went into his home, which is basically like a $1 million condo, detectives discovered more than 1,200 guns, scopes, 6.5 tons of ammunition, bows and arrows, knives, machetes, $230,000 in cash, and other stuff. They located 8 of the 14 vehicles that he stashed around Los Angeles registered to him, including an SUV designed to drive underwater. And so anyway, she was his fiance, this lady, named Nebron, was his fiance for 17 years, and he had told her that he worked as an undercover operative for unnamed government agencies. Now, when he got sick, he refused to go to the hospital, and he knew he was dying. But so anyway, she left, and went up to Oregon, and when she came back, she thought that she was going to, he was just going to be gone. And apparently everything he had told her was a complete hoax. So what do you think about that? Anyway, still don't know what his name is or don't know what his true identity was, except that he was probably just a very eccentric guy, a millionaire, had family money, and was kind of alienated from his family. 6:54. You're listening to AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE. I'm Kelly O'Connell. 523-1450. We'll be right back. Just a couple of minutes left here, but I found this story in KRQE News, Albuquerque. They're doing this thing to promote Mexico, and I heard about this, and it's called True New Mexico, whatever it is. Mysterious blue hole draws visitors to eastern New Mexico. Santa Rosa, New Mexico has something that they call the blue hole. It's capitalized. And they say that Billy the Kid himself used to dip into the hole when he was heading into Santa Rosa. Anyway, it's an artesian spring just off the highway. It pumps out 3,000 gallons of water per minute, enough to fill a standard swimming pool pretty quickly. Very clear and clean water. And it used to be a place where they would go diving. And it's got a bell-shaped bottom. And about 80 feet down, it has got a grate. In 1976, a couple of divers that were training down there got lost and disoriented in some of the caves down there and ended up dying. When they went down, it was about 200 feet down. And a diver looking for these bodies went down 200 feet, and he found himself at the edge of an underwater cliff. Even though he had a powerful flashlight, he could not see the other side or the bottom of it. And so they had kind of started to map out these series of caves down there, underwater caves. So it's an incredible place if you ever get an opportunity to go and check it out. Anyway, it is 6:59. You're listening to the Kelly O'Connell Show on AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. I got big stories on the other side after a break on the hour. And 523-1450 to call in, and we will be right back.
Yeah.
And 705 Kelly, it is the 27th of July. You've got to admit it could be hotter out there. I think that the storms that we've had and the weather and everything, the rain, the tropical storms that have kind of snaked up through Mexico have probably affected El Nino, whatever, has affected the weather a little bit. It hasn't been quite as hot as it could be. I was tracking a little storm that came up and was crossing over the Baja Peninsula that went into Mexico, and then it looked like that there was some clouds that were headed into Tucson. I think Tucson's got a fair amount of rain this year. So anyway, hopefully we'll get some more. Hopefully this season will continue. The season that we're in, the monsoon season, hopefully we'll get some more rain out of it. It certainly would be nice. And all right, so we have talked about probably the main story today is the issue of Mike Huckabee claiming that the Jews are going to be brought to the oven by this deal with Iran. Now, why should you take Mike Huckabee serious? Well, he represents probably more than just about any other candidate besides Scott Walker, this evangelical vote, but this evangelical movement. As a former governor, he's got the political side down. I think he was elected 4 or 5 times to the governorship of Arkansas. On the alternative, he is a pastor. I think he's a Baptist pastor, but I could be have to look at that again. But it seems to me he was a Baptist pastor. Anyway, he's gone to Israel a number of times. He has ties over there, and the fact of the matter is that there's a lot of people out there that are evangelicals who have a hem of the garment relationship with Israel. In their mind, Israel of the Bible is the same as Israel today. They're God's people. They have to be defended under any circumstance. 5, 2, 3, 14, 50. There's been a lot of criticism of that in the last, I'd say the last 10 or 20 years. And this, it provokes a couple of different debates, one of which is a political debate as to who we should be friends with, who should, we should be backing, whether we should favor one country over another in the Middle East, and supposed human rights violations by the Israelis. There's another debate that's a theological debate as to how do you define Israel in the Bible. Even if you attribute to Israel a meaning in the Bible that is outside, larger than life or very important in human history, it does not mean that you would see modern Israel and say it's the same Israel that's in the Bible. This is a huge debate in the church, and it's kind of an interesting one. That's where a lot of this enthusiasm for supporting Israel comes from. Now, there's a practical element too, even outside of say what you would say politics or the religious element. I think that you have to acknowledge the fact that Israel is by far our most reliable and strongest ally in a region where we really don't even understand what the people believe to a great extent. We have refused, it would seem to me, we have refused to accept to a large degree what it is that the Muslim world believes or what Islam teaches. And we've got kind of an Americanized idea of Islam that is totally at odds with a great deal of their history. And also it's at odds with the teachings that come out of the Sharia law. And I think that's one of the reasons that it's been a struggle for us. And for example, why would you not go after ISIS when you had an excuse to do it? When the fact of the matter is that ISIS is trying to not just get rid of us, but get rid of any opposition. Now, there was a story that came out that Iran is basically saying to Iraq, we're giving you an open checkbook to fight ISIS, because Iran does not want ISIS showing up, trying to tell them how to live and trying to kill everybody over there that doesn't agree with the Sharia. And, you know, it is a tremendous problem. And also the issue of whether who speaks for the Quran, who represents their ideas. And so is it Iran? So, you know, what we don't see here as well is that there is this battle for who represents the Quran, who represents Muhammad and Allah. It's kind of an interesting debate, but it is also a debate that has a huge impact on the rest of the world. So anyway, now I want to switch gears here. I mean, the phones aren't exactly lighting up over Iran, so or any other topic so far. But Rand Paul was talking about this abortion issue and said even pro-choice advocates are horrified by Planned Parenthood. Do you think that it's appropriate that the U.S. government gives $500 or $600 million in 1 year to Planned Parenthood? Do you think it is a right, a fundamental right for abortion of such a great degree that the government should even pay for it? Or do you see it, as I see it, as not just a religious and moral issue, but also an economic one? For every person that we abort, we have one less worker. In theory, in the economy, we have that much less economic activity going on, one less person to serve in the military, one less scientist to cure cancer, that type of thing. Here, I've got a little clip from Rand Paul. And Rand Paul is libertarian, number one. Number two, well, he's number one, and he's the senator from the minor senator from Kentucky. He's also a libertarian. His dad is famous Ron Paul. And he is, from what I understand, a Christian, but a libertarian Christian. So he comes at things differently. But he's got a pretty conservative view on this. Check this out from Face the Nation.
Ask you about some legislation you're putting forward about Planned Parenthood. Planned Parenthood's come under criticism recently for some of these videos. Planned Parenthood in the videos where people at Planned Parenthood are talking about fetal tissue research. Planned Parenthood said they did nothing illegal, but you'd like to deny federal funding. How do you plan to do that?
Well, the thing is, as a physician, I watched this video of a physician and her callous sort of, you know, disregard for anything human about life, and just to casually over whine and brie to say, oh, well, we manipulate the baby around so we can get the body parts out first, and then we crush the head at the end instead of at the beginning. I think even pro-choice people are horrified by this. I know a lot of people on the whole spectrum of the abortion issue. I don't talk to any pro-choice friends who are not horrified by this. Every bit of money that Planned Parenthood gets is already given to community health centers. Community health centers do everything Planned Parenthood does except for abortions. There's no reason for Planned Parenthood to get any federal money, and basically the things they are doing are unacceptable to a vast majority of people, pro-life or pro-choice.
Unacceptable, but are they illegal, and will that help you get legislation through?
Well, I don't think it's going to be – my legislation won't be about whether it's legal or not. Money can change hands for research purposes, but the thing is realize what this woman is saying. This woman is saying she manipulates the body around. Most babies present head first when they're being delivered. She's moving the baby around so the head is still in, trying not to crush the liver. She's talking cavalierly about harvesting baby parts. Whether it's against the law or not, my goodness, I think everybody in America is horrified by this, right, and they don't want their tax dollars going to this group.
All right, Senator.
All right, so what do you think? I mean, I think it would be appropriate to stop Planned Parenthood funding from the American government. I mean, I wasn't aware of money was going in. I had no idea there was $500 or $600 million that was going into Planned Parenthood. I'm absolutely, I find it astounding. I mean, it's just, it seems shocking that the government would put that much money into it. On the other hand, there is nothing that's more appropriate to plan, you know, to the left than abortion. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
It's Patty.
Good morning, Patty. Hope you're doing well. And what's on your mind?
I was just going to comment on the Planned Parenthood. I really think it just needs to be defunded and let them do their own funding if that's what they choose.
Well, I don't understand. I don't think that there's an economic argument. That the economic arguments that are used towards bringing in illegals could just as easily be put on aborted babies with a lot more legal clarity, a lot more legal support, you know?
Yeah. I also was reading an article with Senator Paul but it was along with that bill he's trying to do. It's something about the highway or transportation. So I don't know what that means, because were they using federal funds to go towards highways to fund Planned Parenthood? That's kind of how I read it, but I can't find the article. It's in my bookmark somewhere, but it was out there. It was last week.
Maybe they're putting the baby corpses in the highways, you know.
Probably.
Like the mafia. Like
but
the
anyway,
mafia
I
does.
Just thought I'd throw that out there. Thank you, Kelly.
Thanks a lot, Patty. Have a good day. All right. That is, really something else. Now, I got a little clip from O'Reilly, another O'Reilly on this as well. But, you know, the thing is that if you are going to support abortion, here's the thing that I think throws people off. I think that abortion has sold itself for a number of years on the shock value of just the thing itself. It is claimed to be a right. It is, you know, all of this, there's all of this advertising behind it. Step aside from the morality of it, the religion of it, and look at it economically. It's absolutely ridiculous to to waste a resource. The number one resource in America or any other country is people, and we're grinding them up and pouring them down the toilet or putting them in the incinerator or whatever by the millions every year. Close down the border and get rid of abortion. That's my take on it. 718 Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450. You're listening to AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE. We will be right back. It's about 72 degrees outside, about 100 today is going to be the high. And all right, so I'm going to start doing just go from topic to topic and see if anything stirs up your interest here. But there was an interesting conversation between the Cruz missile, Ted Cruz, Senator Cruz, and Rush Limbaugh, in which Cruz described how hundreds of billions of dollars in loans were offered to corporations, a few big corporations, for support of this TPP, this trade bill. And that's one of the things that I hear people commenting a lot, how we're turning into a nation or become a nation that is run by big corporations. What do you think about that? All right, another topic, another issue is Obama has said that his number one goal or his number one regret is not getting meaningful gun laws changed, you know, get a meaningful modification, revision on gun laws. Now, he wants to cut back on gun rights or the way gun rights are expressed. He wants to get guns out of the hands of criminals. If that's true, why doesn't he go over to the Middle East where we're already at and go and kill ISIS, who are using their guns to kill people in the name of Christianity and in the name of Islam? These ISIS people are turning women into sex slaves and selling them in open-air markets, and they're cutting the heads off of children because they're Christians. President who claims to be a Christian, and I have no idea what he believes, he wants gun control over here, but he doesn't want it in the Middle East. I don't get it. I will never, ever, ever understand why we are taking such a handoff approach to ISIS since it started. Since it started, we put a vacuum over there. We were in Iraq. We pulled out. It provided this perfect vacuum for ISIS to arise and now begin creeping across the Middle East. And we've got every excuse under the sun to go and kill those guys and take away their gun rights. The president's not interested in that. Okay, here is another issue. The president goes over and he gives this speech in Kenya, and he chastises the government in Kenya for not supporting gay rights. Now, he compares gay rights, resisting gay rights, to being in favor of Jim Crow laws. Obama just had a conversion experience on the gay movement. I don't understand the logic in going to another country and lecturing them on this type of thing. I don't get it. I mean, why would he do that? He just changed his position, apparently, because Joe Biden accidentally stated that the administration supported gay marriage. And so he goes over there and he says, as an African-American in the United States, I am painfully aware of the history of what happens when people are treated differently under the law. There were all sorts of rationalizations that were provided by the power structure for decades in the United States for segregation and Jim Crow. It is very difficult to impose on people that which they themselves do not accept, said Kenyan President Kenyatta. For Kenyans today, the issue of gay rights is really a non-issue. We want to focus on other issues that are really day-to-day issues for our people. So why is the president, under what rationale does the president have this conversion experience over here? You know, gay marriage is passed in the Supreme Court, and then he goes to this other country and lectures them about accepting gay rights. I think that's crazy. I mean, it's one thing to have good standing with other countries, but to go in there, and if he's going to go in there and lecture people, why doesn't he go to Iran and lecture how they treat their citizens? Did you know that public executions have doubled this year in Iran? There was 400 last year, now there's 800, and they're saying that the pressure has been let off of Iran to act in any particular way, and now they're just doing what they want. And here's the problem with the kind of diplomacy that the president is pushing. Behind the scenes, and up front, it looks like this tremendous achievement of advocacy and of just like this kind of enlightened form of foreign policy, where this one leader goes and normalizes trade or relationship with Cuba, with Iran, with other countries. But here's the question: wasn't there a reason that we were embargoing these countries before? Wasn't there something that we were trying to achieve? Weren't we trying to get them to change their way that they treated people, like we're asking Kenya to do? So people in Iran that are gay are regularly killed. Where is the president going to Iran to give a speech to say, you know, I know what it's like to be treated differently, and boy, you've got gay laws in Iran that are like Jim Crow. Why isn't he doing that? He's not even trying to get the hostages away from Iran in the middle of this giant deal that he made. He doesn't even have the cojones to do that, but he'll go to Kenya and lecture them on gay right, you know, gay laws and stuff. I find this guy so strange, but this is, I think, an effect of far leftism that creates different standards for different, you know, there's not one standard out there. It's whatever is convenient. I find it troubling. Anyway, 728, 729, 523, 1450 to call in, 805-6180 to text, 856-180 to text in. Kelly O'Connell, we'll be right back.
If you're struggling with bipolar depression,
all right, there's a lot of criticism out there for Hillary Clinton based on what happened with the emails. Now, as you recall, she had her own email server. She basically had her own little network that she used. Instead of using the government email, she set up her own email, and it ran out of her house, as a matter of fact. And so she used that for her official emails. Now, she, when this was discovered, which it was well known, obviously, if you get an email from somebody from the government and it doesn't say .gov at the end, you're on notice that it's not from a government email account. But it was well known. But there's a couple of interesting things that have developed. Number one is that now it has turned out that the White House at some level has decided it is going to harm Hillary Clinton. And there's a federal investigation into whether or not she was using her email account to send classified information, which would be against the law, number one. Number two, some people think having your own email system to use for government work is illegal. But there is somebody who apparently hates her guts. It's Valerie Jarrett, supposedly hates Hillary's guts. And they said that this article that I read said that it is clear that Obama gave Valerie Jarrett the right to go put a knife in her back. Now, if Hillary Clinton is destroyed in this, who takes over as the front runner? Is it O'Malley from Maryland? Is it Bernie Sanders? Is maybe he too far to the left? Or could it be someone like Biden who comes into the race, or even Al Gore? Interesting. Well, here's Carly Fiorino talking about Hillary breaking the law.
Joining us now, one of Clinton's toughest critics, Republican presidential candidate Carly Fiorina, and Jess McIntosh, a vice president of Emily's List, which works to elect Democratic women who take liberal stands on abortion and other issues. Ms. Fiorina, let's start with the security referral by two inspectors general to the FBI. Do you think that Hillary Clinton broke the law?
Well, it's clear she broke the rules. It's absolutely crystal clear she broke the rules. It's crystal clear that she has been engaged in a cover-up of lots of things. Benghazi, the fact that she broke the rules. I mean, how amazing that she's had this server in her basement all this time and decides to wipe it clean 2 years after she leaves the State Department and just before she gets ready to run for president. Of course she's engaged in a cover-up, and of course she's broken the rules.
McIntosh, here are two.
You got it right there. The claim is that she broke the rules by having her own email account. And most importantly, there was something like almost 50% of the emails that she had sent out that she deleted. And I believe this was after she was given a subpoena, basically a subpoena to show up with this evidence or to send this evidence in. She did not do so. Instead, she deleted it, and she's saying, well, by obviously I would have never deleted anything important. It was all personal emails. So the candidate is not allowing any questions. She's not allowing any questions to be given to her, and apparently that's okay with the New York Times and other media outlets. So there's no ability to really get her on this issue because she doesn't allow the question to come up, and she will not even really talk to reporters. Instead of the media turning on her, they just seem to just kind of be transfixed by her. And in the meantime, now Obama's administration has apparently turned on her and is going to allow her to be possibly even investigated or charged with a federal crime. So it's all very interesting. Now, here is, to changing topics, 523-1450, 805-6180. Do you care if Hillary's in the race? And we do have a couple of texts here, one of which is in Spanish. If Planned Parenthood is all about women's health, we are back to the challenge of the last century. It depends on what the meaning of is. What do you call it when Planned Parenthood accepts government funding now that the AHC is here to stay? Double harvesting. So it must be talking about those death lists. But here's Donald Trump talking about his lead in the polls. Why is he leading? In my opinion, because people are refreshed. We have one person, say what you will about him, who does not apologize for his position. Isn't that what America used to stand for?
Well, I just heard, and I just see by the crowds we have. Yesterday I was in Iowa. We had a tremendous crowd, 1,500 people, and it was a beautiful group of people, and they were so enthusiastic and standing ovations, and they want to see the country be great again. And frankly, you know, I can't say I'm unhappy or anything. I'm not that surprised because I see the kind of a crowd we get. We're getting the biggest crowd, and we're getting by far the biggest ovations. And they want to, you know, these are great people, and they want to see this country turned around. Our country's going, I mean, I want to be nice by saying in the wrong direction, but much worse than that. So, you know, I will bring it back. I'll bring back jobs from China and all these other places that are ripping us off, and I think that's what people want to see.
Now, there have been questions about whether or not you would run as an independent if you don't get the nomination. You seem in recent days to be dialing that suggestion back a bit. You said you've been talking to the head of the Republican National Committee about your candidacy as a Republican, about your feeling that they need to be more impartial. What are they telling you?
Well, I've had some great conversations over the last few days, and they're terrific people. I've known Reince for a long time, and he's a terrific guy, and the group in there is really good. But, you know, they view me as an outsider, I guess, and now they're starting to view me not as an outsider because I'm leading in all the polls, not just yours. And I think they've been really nice over the last few days. They're starting to see what's happening. I mean, there's a movement going on. This is more than me. This is a movement going on. People are tired of these incompetent politicians in Washington. They can't get anything done. They can't make deals. They can't do anything. I mean, they go and all they care about is getting elected. They don't care about anything else. And they know that, you know, I built an incredible company, and, you know, a lot of people, including yourself, but a lot of people thought that I wasn't going to be running and I wouldn't put in my financials. I put in my financials there much better than anybody ever thought. People said, oh.
Well, all right. So here's what I think. I mean, I think at some point, and maybe this is all part of his genius, but Trump is starting to back off a little bit on the self-promotion. And he's saying it's bigger than about me. Of course it is. Politics is always bigger than one person. You know, and so I think it has been a tremendous error for this administration, the current administration, to present itself as above history or as this kind of messianic movement to cure inequality or to set the record straight in the world, and all of these things that are very painful to experience. And the upshot is that if this is the worst country in history, which seems to be the implication of a lot of these people that are leading us, and we got to be put back in our place, what's the best country? What country are we supposed to aspire to? Or are we a good country that still has to be punished? If we're being punished for past sins, then who's watching the, who's got their hand on the wheel? Who's watching forward? If we're the worst country and we've given more to charity than any other country in history, we've done more to spread freedom than any other country, isn't this an insane journey that we're on? You know? Anyway, Kelly O'Connell here. 523-1450 to call in, 805-6180. It's 742 at 72 degrees outside. Slight chance of rain tonight. It's going to be around 100 degrees for the high. We will be right back on AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. 523-1450, call in here.
Nobody has the right to. Don't you know what's playing with the fire? But we can't stop this burning desire.
All right, so we're going to have Trump in the race for a while. Here is my challenge to you, the Trump challenge. Forget about political correctness, which is poison. Forget about political correctness and just, if you're going to apologize, if you do apologize, do so when you know that you're actually wrong, not because you violated someone else's standard of right and wrong. Live according to your own values or your own beliefs. Let's stop trying to placate people. That's been the the PC movement has been the bête noir, the black beast of the GOP for the last 20 years, and it's just tearing the heart out of this country. We do have a phone call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Good morning, Kelly. This is Art.
Hey, Art.
And
thanks
I
for
was
calling.
With. Good morning.
Go ahead.
I was calling to comment about the previous discussion about the president lecturing the Kenyans about. Virtue. I looked it up in my almanac. Kenya is largely a Christian country. I have a 2007 almanac, and that's dated, and the figures might have changed. But in this almanac, there are about 45% Roman Catholics. The rest are 40% are Protestants, and they have a 10% Muslim population. It's safe for him to talk over there and lecture. And the left loves to look down their nose and lecture to Christians.
Yeah, well,
of course he wouldn't dare.
Well, I was going to say there's a horn that what they call the Horn of Africa that sticks out that is kind of below the Arabic Peninsula, and Kenya is at the bottom of that. Historically, the top of Africa was and is to this day Muslim, and as you move down, you get more into paganism and Christianity and stuff. But you're exactly right. What do you think about this? What do you think about him going over there and telling them something like that?
Well, it's just more of his arrogance, his sense that he's on the side of moral superiority, and I guess he figures he's on a par with the Pope. He can go around lecturing the world about virtue and global warming and all these other issues the left is so wrapped up in and concerned with.
It would be one thing if he went over there and told them you need to work on free trade or in some general sense human rights, but to specifically go and tell an entire country that you need to support gay rights is struck me as so, like you say, incredibly arrogant. But I mean, this is just a year or two after he himself. I mean, this is like, what do they call it? The former smoker syndrome. The person who stopped smoking is the
right.
worst person in terms of giving other people lectures.
Yeah, I was there for a while. Yeah. That's right. And you know, the people on the left should listen to shows like yours, Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, and hear all these quotes. Hear all these sudden turnarounds. You know, quotes that people on the left were making just a few years ago. They've completely done a rotation on.
Well, here's my mystery that I've been thinking about recently. If you're going to say, okay, you can stand up and say that the gay rights movement is correct and homosexuality is moral. You can do that. You can do that about a number of other activities or ideas, but where do you get this information from? For the sake of the argument, why was it okay now, but it wasn't okay 2 years ago when the president wasn't behind it? Or 10 or 20 years ago when most people weren't behind it. As best I can gather, they're stating that society is evolving and homosexuality was always right, but now we can finally celebrate it. Who is going to make that decision? Who decides ultimately what is right and wrong to put into this politically correct law book, you know?
That's right. Why do we have to do it so suddenly? Why do we have to ram it through without some consideration and honest debate, logical, reasoned debate? I don't know. They've got the population so dumbed down and so busy with television and drinking and sex. I don't know. People are just so distracted. The last thing they want to think about is social change.
Art, listen, when you go onto YouTube and you see one person, you know, there's I've been looking at a video about this kid named Jazz who is supposedly going to get a sex change and was allowed to dress and act like a girl. He's a kid. He's a boy. He was allowed to act as a girl from like the age of 3 or 4 or whatever. And now he's become this prominent advocate for the gay, you know, transgendered and everything. But I mean, I'm just so fascinated that, you know, people would go into this forum and lay waste to anybody who dares to disagree with this. But I mean, this is very, very, I mean, it with the most, like, treating these people like they're pedophiles or they're murderers or they're traitors to their country, giving them the very worst treatment. Like they're astounded. They're scandalized. They're absolutely apoplectic over this idea that they would resist this. And it strikes me as we're in the midst of this giant brainwashing session, which it's not clear to me where it's going to end, but the outcome of it has got to be bad if you can so easily change people's minds.
Sure, sure, and it's in the censorship. You know, you can't stand up and argue with them or
that's what Trump is about. Trump is standing, and this is why I'm a little bit encouraged recently about the country. Trump is standing up for the idea that you can give your real opinion and not apologize for it. To me, there's hope. I mean, the left doesn't realize they're building a trap that they are going to be caught in and destroyed by. A revolution always eats its own children. People need to remember that. Thanks for the call, Art, and have a good day. Folks, we've got to move along here. We'll take a little break. Great call from Art. And 752, Kelly O'Connell Show, 523-1450. All right, so we got just a few minutes here. I wanted to mention to you, I was going to get into the third-party candidacy of Trump, but let's leave that for tomorrow. I was doing some research over the weekend. I was trying to figure out, when people talk about the law of the Bible, they talk about how violent it was and how, like, you know, just for sassing your parents, you could get stoned, you could get killed. So I was trying to figure out if there was any substance to this. Like, every time a kid smarted off to his parents, did he get killed, you know? And So I was doing some research, and I ran into this great website that was talking about what punishment, what the law and punishment was in the ancient Israel, ancient Hebrews. And suddenly it just kind of, you know, dawned on me. This guy was pointing out that basically in any of these situations where there was like a adultery or even a murder or the disrespect of parents, all these different things that could get stoning or execution, it was the person who was the victim or the victim's family, it was their job to take the case forward. There was no police department. The first police department in the history of the world was when Caesar Augustus brought police into Rome. They were called the Peregrini. That was the first police force. So you wouldn't have what we understand to be the police, the district attorney and stuff. Now, they did have some people involved who would have, in theory, been able to help out with a prosecution. But you see the way that it happened with Jesus when the woman caught in adultery was brought to him, and he was asked to help. Basically, the Jews, the Sanhedrin or the Pharisees were trying to get him to judge this woman so she could then be killed, stoned to death, and then the blood would be on his hands. And basically, he sidesteps that very adroitly. But here's the thing. If your son was sassing off to you in the Old Testament, you would have had to bring that to the local authorities, and then there would have had to be a prosecution. At the end of the prosecution, there would be the sentence for execution. So a lot of these, I'm not saying that nobody was ever killed for sassing or disrespecting their parents, but I think that it would have been, and from the information that I've gotten, it's very rare, very rare. And I think a lot of these crimes that had the potential for a prosecution and a death sentence would have not been very often prosecuted, because the families or the victim would have had to carry it through all the way to the end. So this is what in the ancient world is called self-help. And this is what Muslim law is based on to this day, and was a factor in the ancient legal world. There was no elaborate court system. There were no police. There were no investigators. Although in ancient Rome, there were homicide investigators when somebody was killed. And Rome was very innovative in some ways. But generally speaking, there's no police to go arrest the kid who is sassing his parents or breaking the Sabbath or whatever else it was. So I found that kind of interesting. Anyway, thanks for tuning in. We'll hit some of this stuff again tomorrow. Have a great day. You've been listening to AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE. I'm Kelly O'Connell. Have a great day. Ciao.
Kissing them, I never knew how.